And I think in general, the more people understand some of where it's coming from, I mean, like sticking in the evolution of the habit, and you know, that's kind of it not only gets them to see how they're built and how a lot of these things that people tend to interpret as bad things are actually good things about the way we're built, but we're starting to use it against ourselves instead of use it for us. But it also gives you a chance to sort of get your credentials by bringing in the science of it. So, for instance, if you have a listen on those Bertolini recordings of the where she talks about those two kinds of learning, and you can refer to, you know, her and bring that out and describe that that helps people really make sense. That, you know, it's not just you making this up and asking to do some weird thing. You're talking about some way that we're actually built. That, you know, oddly enough, everybody's had all these experiences. The thing that I was floored by, when you think about it, is that whatever you want to call it, the good way of learning, the whole system way of learning, is the way we all learned when we were kids. It's the way we learned how to do everything. We just knew what we wanted. Well, I want to climb that tree. And you just went at it, and you know, you slipped and you did something and it wasn't quite the way you wanted, or you wanted to play baseball, so you didn't go out and take baseball lessons and learn how to hold the bat, you know, unless you went to some class. You just got hold of it and started to play and got better and better. And it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But people have forgotten that, and then they get to, you know, performance stuff, and suddenly they think, oh, this is totally different. I can't learn this like I learned everything else. Now I have to teach my parts what to do, and you know, as if, right? But so when you can bring in those two, the characteristics of those two ways of learning, and why one is just so much faster and so much better and so much deeper.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you the credibility on the one hand and the theoretical background to say, this is why we're going to play with this. Marion, do you have examples of some of the application of this to theater things that might help? And
yeah.
Or probably you do, Bonnie, too, if you've been playing with them.
Think about it.
This is where you both have the advantage over me, because you've been doing the actual stuff and using it. I've only been teaching people, but I'm not an actor, so I haven't had to, you know, learn lines and do rehearsals and do the stuff. So you'll have more, you know, kind of either stories on the one hand or insights as to the real nitty-gritty of applying it to certain things.
I certainly apply it to myself when I'm working. Are you looking more for, like, how would I go about explaining it to a student?
Yeah, partly, and also, you know, kind of experiences you've had of applying it in certain situations that give you insights of, you know, this is kind of in that second part when people are actually trying to apply it and run into,
mm-hmm.
you know, this difficulty, or what do I do here? Or, but shouldn't I do this? Yeah. Or my other teacher told me this. Or,
I can give you an example from, I'm trying to pick something that's kind of close to home and recent, so I can look at exactly what's going on. And this isn't particularly an acting one, but I did some background recording yesterday and the day before, and I was laying in vocal tracks. And I've never done that before, not spoken, but sung. And the guy who was doing the mixing, it's really just that he wants to learn how to compose and mix, and I'm interested in learning about the recording part. So I just want to get this in the right order. So I noticed that as the point in the song came up where I was going to start singing, I noticed self-consciousness and tightness and all kinds of things that I would consider low-value experiences. And I also felt like my voice was very thin and was coming out kind of pinched. And when I listened to the playback, I thought, yeah, that sounds pretty pinched and pretty small. So I think before doing the learning method stuff, that's kind of a fork in the road right there. I think my focus would have been on how do I get a bigger sound, or how do I get a better sound, or I might have gone into territory of how do I sound more like, you know, pick a singer whose voice has those qualities. But instead of going down that road, I thought, well, okay, let's look really closely at what I know that I've had lots of experiences where I've really enjoyed singing and I really like it. And people in general say, oh, great voice, you know, I love to hear you sing. So it's not like that's never happened. But it wasn't happening now. So I thought, what am I doing now that's different from those high value experiences? And I got a few things, like imagining that the moment of singing was sort of 3 feet out in front of me and that it was something I had to get to. So my system was organizing itself around a narrow point 3 feet in front of me, which isn't, I recognize this is something that came up last year, about to go on stage, feeling that the scene is sort of around 5 feet in front of me and it's about the size of a, you know, a deck of cards. And that's just that's
getting ready to act thing.
Yeah, getting ready to act, and I want to do a good job in the scene, and the scene is this small thing out in front of me, which I was surprised to hear from other people or from David that's not that unusual. It's absurd, because of course the scene isn't an object and it's not 5 feet in front of me. It's just, none of that's true. But because I've gotten that out on the table before, I recognized, oh, I'm looking at the song, the singing, the part where I sing as an object in front of me. So of course everything is organizing itself around that. So I thought, well, I'm not doing anything to get that organization, that idea, but the part where I do have a decision is when I notice that I'm imagining the point of singing as being this small fixed point, I can notice that and I cannot react at all to that. Like I can inhibit the reacting around and just hold it as a question. Is the point of singing, the time when I start singing, is that actually this little thing in front of me? And I know enough now to allow repetition. And luckily, I mean, time was absolutely cheap. It's not a rented studio. So after, with a lot of with two or three repetitions, keeping that in mind, gradually my notion of the point of singing as this small thing, just, I didn't have to do anything to get rid of that. It just started to appear more and more funny, like, well, okay, it isn't. That's not even real. But I didn't have to talk myself out of it. I just said, let's question this. Let's keep repeating the experience. And the one thing that I did, like actively did, is I thought, well, the place where I can stop it is, you know, I can't not have this jump into my head because I'm not doing anything to get it. It just jumps into my head. Oh, here it comes. But I don't have to react further. I can go, oh, here it comes. Isn't this interesting? And not do anything different, not get into vocal quality. And I told the guy I was working with, I said, you know, it's small and tight right now. And he said, yeah, it's tight, you're held back and whatever. I said, yeah, I'm gonna have a couple repetitions of this while I play on with something. And after about three of them, that whole concept of small object in front of me, which sounds bizarre when I talk about, that wasn't happening. So I had much more awareness of the entire room. I had a awareness of the person, you know, the guy I'm friends with who was doing the mixing. I also was able to then have imaginary relationships with, you know, imaginary people that I might be trying to express something to, which is, you know, like in the song, or wouldn't it be neat if I was singing with so-and-so and communicating something with them. Like a lot of good coordination to do with communication just came bubbling up naturally once I wasn't doing that other thing. And then I did get a direction from the guy doing the mixing, can you let it out more? Can you just do, gesture with his hands? Like, we're good friends, so that I am at ease communicating with him. But he was like, get bigger. And then I really stopped myself because I thought, okay, what I really don't want to do is I don't want to do something to get a bigger sound. I know I don't want to do that because that's that thing of once I do that, it means I have to do it every single time if it's successful. Yeah. I don't want to get busy with that. So I thought, this is a good chance for an experiment. And again, it's totally no pressure. So I thought, what if I, because this is what I do in rehearsal, if a director gives me a direction and I think, oh, how am I going to do that? I think, well, I'm literally going to ask my system that I would like a sound that sounds bigger to Chris, and I have no idea what that, I don't know beyond that. I would just like that. I'm just going to stay with that. And I thought of the thing we talked about recently of the important thing is if you're going to do that, you really have to be willing to have it not happen. If it's really an experiment, you really have to say, okay, I'm going to want that. I'm not going to do anything to get it. And that includes that might not happen. I'm just going to see. And again, two or three repetitions. And he was like, oh, yeah, it's totally different. Listen to the playback. And this is a neat thing because it's recorded. I could listen to the playback and I thought, wow, that sounds very different. And also you can look at the wave pattern. And yeah. He said, look, the wave pattern is completely different. And I was like, oh, yeah, it isn't. And because it was, I was still kind of hung up on sound because, you got the headphones on and everything. I thought, I wonder what'll happen. I can see the wave pattern while I'm recording. I'm going to try like a biofeedback thing of, I want the wave pattern to be even more like that. I'm not going to try anything to get it, and I'm not going to worry about the sound, and I'm just going to see what happens if I do it visually. So I did that, and I ended up with this totally cool gospel-y sound that I didn't know I could do, and I didn't tell Chris what I was doing because I wanted to try it. All I was doing was looking at the wave pattern and going, I'd like more of this in the pattern. I don't know how I'm going to do that, and I don't care what it sounds like either. I'm just going to see. And then because I'm not a practiced singer in that way, one thing that did happen is when I did that, I went pitchy. Like my pitch was not exact. When I was wanting to get my pitch exact, I was not getting the big sound. But again, I was able to go, well, how many times have I actually done this? How many times have I done a recording session? I'm not a professional singer. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I can, a big sound is available, a bigger sound than I thought is available to me, more interesting color in the tone. But right now, that plus exact pitch don't go together. That's okay. This is, that's something that comes, I think, with that's why people practice, Like that sounds like it's asking a bit much for a one-off. But I thought, well, that's interesting. I should clock this. And were I to keep repeating this experiment, it would be interesting to see a year down the road, is pitch an issue? And in this case, because of the magic of Melodyne and these he's working the program, he'd already explained to me, don't worry about pitchy. It's ridiculously easy to correct pitch. And as long as I don't get hung up on it with my ego, he can electronically correct it, and honestly, I can't tell the difference. And I've got a pretty good ear; he can fix it. Yeah. So it's not so. So I actually had permission to get pitchy, but what he can't really change is the actual sound quality. So that's what I focused on. And
I see that there's a bunch of things there, and I bet it wouldn't even take a year if you were to stick with your experiment of knowing what you wanted and not try to correct it. I bet your system would refine what you were doing much, much quicker than that.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Even weeks, probably, if not less. But there's something here, and this is something to bear in mind, too, as you're working with people, is this whole thing about, for lack of a better term, the space, where you are and what you're up to that you were talking about. I think, the sound is out here in front of me, whether that's because of there's an actual microphone there or, however people are thinking of it. And then notice something interesting. He said, oh, yeah, and it sounded like you were back in yourself. You thought the song was out there. So according to the out there, you were back here.
Oh, that's interesting.
So from his point of view, he's seeing you back there. You're seeing the song out there in front of you.
Oh, that's interesting. There's a correspondence because, he was saying something like you're held back or... And I remember going, okay, now really get clear that I'm not doing anything to hold back. So there's no point in me trying to, let go because I'm not trying to hold back. But so if I'm thinking of the thing out here, then I literally am.
You're going, it's out there. You are back from it, which is out there. And sometimes you can just go without trying to do anything. Just go. It's the way we, it's part of this way we project things in space.
Yeah.
You can see people trying to figure something out by putting it out there and, somewhere out in front of them or back in the back of their head and you can move those things around and play with it. You can go, is it back there? What if, and especially when you get, he's seeing me held back from the sound. I'm seeing the sound out in front of me. What if I just bring the sound right back into the middle of me? You can move the space. This is a little bit like your running thing when you were going on running and going, I don't know, my arms feel really dorky, and you were just going, okay, I've got myself, held into my arms there. What if I let that? You can move that space around, and in a sense, it's what you did.
It's not
so much a doing thing. You're just going, I've kind of, for whatever reasons, have projected or narrowed the space here or there. This is all very plastic thing. If you move that bubble back to being you and let it open out and go right ahead, almost as if it is a movement of space.
That's really neat because a couple of times in the session, I had a really high quality experience when I was just kind of noodling around and I got immediate, I love that feedback. And I thought, okay, well, mark this and what's going on at this time. And that was my experience. As I thought, well, I'm in the music, which is about around here. I'm hearing the horns here, I'm hearing the bass here, and I'm having a nice kind of 3D experience of sound. And then within that, I'm just playing as if I'm climbing around on a jungle gym or something inside it. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's cool. However I describe it, that to me is a high value experience. So just to notice that and refer back to it, and that helped me a lot. Once I had a few of those, I thought, okay, I know that feels good. So that's kind of like, it would be really interesting to talk about this in terms of a kid working on a monologue or something. Because you never hear that kind of talk about, I can talk about it for myself, from my own experience, but talking about it with somebody else, I'm not sure.
Well, it's an odd one because most people aren't paying any attention to the space they're in. They don't really know whether they've narrowed into their head somewhere or narrowed off to think about something, or they know the experience they have, but they don't realize the connections with it. And it's not an easy one to get at, although, if you have people on a week-to-week basis, you can start to get at it. You can see the result in somebody. If you see somebody who's very, let's say, centered and expanded, where they're in the center of their space and it's open rather than narrowed or pulled out in front of them or back behind them, or this is, you can even see it in people's movement when they go and they move, and you can see, there they were. They were standing and they went off and their hips move first, instead of all of them at once. You can almost pick out where they're paying attention to themselves, where they think the movement starts, or because you can see it. I mean, that's to them, that is their sense of the movement is what organizes it. And it's a very spatially organized thing. People go, I'm back here, I want to go out there. They're going to be doing something to get out there because they see out there is somehow not where they are. It's not included in my whole openness. It's another place out there, and I'm back here. So I'm going to have to do something to get back here over there. But they've never had an experience of a change, so they don't really know they're doing it. But sometimes you can get at that just by asking people, now, where are you right now? Where's your attention?